I really liked, and some of you may have seen this particular picture on social media or elsewhere, but I think it's an important one, especially as we think about our current environment and diversity and inclusion and equity in the workplace. We know that coronavirus has affected the world. We have all been in this storm together. But perhaps what we have seen more than any other time, or what's been made so clear to us, is that while we were in the same storm, that there are different boats that each of us are in. Some have individual circumstances that make remote work easy, while others are very difficult. Some have enjoyed this pause, while others have found it agonizing. I think that diversity has really shown itself in the workplace during this time, making it, again, like I said, all the more important for it to be a focus moving forward in the workplace if it's not already. So what will we be talking about over the next half an hour today? A quick agenda. I'll be talking a little bit about diversity and inclusion assessment, understanding the needs of your workplace, the planning process for diversity and inclusion initiatives, as well as key program and execution. Throughout, my focus will be the legal aspects and challenges that you need to be aware of as an attorney looking at diversity and inclusion in your workplace. And I'll also speak about some of the best practices, especially best practices that we've seen now in this COVID-19 world. So let me start with the qualitative assessment, or the idea of getting started. How do we assess what's needed from a diversity inclusion perspective in our workplace? Well, I think an important thing to know is not one size fits all when it comes to diversity inclusion. Just because a competitor or another organization that's in your industry is doing a particular type of initiative doesn't mean that it'll fit the individual culture of your workplace, which is important to keep in mind. So if you are getting started or you are retooling your diversity and inclusion initiatives at your workplace, really start with, number one, what are we trying to accomplish? What are the goals here? And what are we doing now to accomplish those goals? And what do we need to do in the future? How do we get answers to all of those key questions? I think you first identify what are the crisis areas. Of course, right now in this pandemic atmosphere, the crisis areas can be blaring in the face as to issues of connectedness or how we operate in a remote work environment. But think about those as we think about what exactly the issues are that we're trying to accomplish. I've seen some organizations do culture audits, climate surveys, and even focus groups as they look at what are we trying to accomplish, what are we doing now, and what do we need to do. Prior efforts are good to look at as well as do you have employee resource groups, do you need employee resource groups, or do we need more of them? And of course, what type of policies and training you already have in the works, that's certainly part of the qualitative review. I think one thing that gets a lot of focus when it comes to diversity and inclusion, though, is not the qualitative assessment in terms of what do we want to do and how do we get there, but the quantitative side, the numbers. And certainly using data to drive processes and measurement is a key part of diversity and inclusion. But it's also rife, I think, with potential legal issues to consider. So let's kind of talk through those. And when I talk about quantitative assessment, what we're often talking about is demographics and representation of various individuals in our organization. So one thing that often comes up is collection. How do we know who is in our organization from a demographic standpoint? And what specifically types of information can we collect legally? Well, if your organization happens to be a federal contractor, has contracts with the federal government over a certain amount, then you would be required to collect certain demographic information. That includes race and gender information, as well as veteran and disability information. As a federal contractor, you're required to collect that demographic information both prior to an offer of employment or in the applicant stage, and also after you provide an offer to a particular candidate. If your organization is not a federal contractor, then there's no requirement to collect that data, but it's certainly something that you'd want to look at as you're considering the data needed to drive your particular efforts of diversity and inclusion. A key pinpoint to know here from a legal perspective is certain you are permitted to collect race and gender and veteran information pre-offer, but information regarding someone's disability cannot be collected pre-offer under the Americans with Disabilities Act unless you're a federal contractor where there is an exemption and actually specifically a requirement. Some organizations ask about collecting information on LGBT status, both pre-offer or post-offer. It's not required as a federal contractor. Can be collected, though, but that's something to consider how you will collect that information and use it in your organization. With all collection of demographic information, it must be absolutely voluntary. Regardless of if you're a federal contractor or not, you cannot require that individuals provide you this information, but you can have a voluntary self-identification process. We recommend that as part of that process that you explain why you're collecting it. Either it's for a federal contractor obligations or for a voluntary diversity and inclusion program. And like I said, it's important to keep in mind whether this is at the applicant stage or not, that can make a difference as to what exactly you can collect.